This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a fresh hour of Sharp Money live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D, hanging out on a Friday. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. Patrick off for the next couple of weeks. It's that dull July sabbatical here with our producer Wyatt Tomchek, who's in for Dustin. Dustin, I believe, back next week. And nope. We have he's not back next week.
I will be in the chair next week.
Oh, you'll be in the chair next week.
Right. Joe's going to be in town. I'm excited.
Joe Sorallo going to be in town starting next week.
It's going to be an overwhelmingly Italian presence in the booth.
It is. Urban. Oh, when because I believe Dave Ross is hosting on Thursday. There you go.
Dave's Italian. Oh, baby. Right?
Wow.
Yeah, yes, another Italian New Yorker. You wouldn't guess it from his name.
He uses a radio name. His real last name, you're like, yes, you are.
Right. His moniker.
It's
Dave Gabagool.
Pagluccia?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you are right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the guy was in the Marine Corps. I hope I didn't just blow up his spot with some enemies overseas.
No.
No. He won that battle. He's a veteran of the first Gulf War. Which, by the way, I'm going to have to share the Super Bowl story, but back in the day, Joe, they didn't have, obviously no social media and whatnot. He was told it was the Bills-Giants Super Bowl that the Bills won, and Dave was all high and mighty, said the Bills were going to win, and then about 3 months later, the person who told him said, I got it wrong. It was the Giants who won the Super Bowl.
Wait, you said 3 months later?
Yeah.
No way. Yes. I mean, I know they didn't have Twitter, but they knew who won the freaking Super Bowl. Come on, I'm
gonna have to.
That's pre-internet. I mean,
we will have to get Dave to tell the story, but it is a hilarious story.
I
love the story.
It was the Gulf War, not the Civil War. Come on,
Gulf War, Civil War.
They didn't have to wait for a guy to go from Massachusetts to North Carolina on horseback and announce who won the Super Bowl.
As he said, this is why he hates the Navy. Because there was somebody in the Navy.
Was that the impetus for the great Castaway movie being made? Because of lack of information? I mean, that's what I was.
That's a great movie, by the way.
Great movie. Well, I mean, I think that's a great movie with my last name and the volleyball as being a volleyball player. Great movie. I love that.
So does it pain you when Wilson just floated away?
Yeah, but I knew that he was going to a better place.
A better place. I mean, he probably got eaten by a shark.
You can't say that definitively. I mean, that's not a known thing. It's just... That's a figment
of your
imagination. If not
even, at the very least, popped by a shark.
Pop probably more accurate. But that's what tape and air compressors are for. Alas. This hour here on the show, Lou Finicaro, Gambling Lou, outstanding UFC mind, is going to join us in 15 minutes, talk his plays for UFC Fight Night. Great week to be betting UFC, especially as we are very close to that stretch where it is baseball and baseball only until August, as Wimbledon is set to wind down, Euro Copa America finals each on Sunday. So excited to get Lou's perspective. He has got a quartet of plays for the Fight Night coming up. And then this hour, Joe, we've been doing it all week. Jared and I talking different divisions in the NFL. Today's division, it is the AFC North, and that's where we'll start this hour here, beginning with the team at the top, at least on the odds board, the Baltimore Ravens, amidst the division where you can honestly make a case for pretty much everybody, and that's what's the beauty of the AFC North here, Joe. Let's start with your take on, at least from an offensive perspective, that's what I've heard the most here on Baltimore. When you think about a group that came in, had all sorts of success last year, but has to replace a good amount of the offensive line, how will it look now that teams have had some film to see how Lamar Jackson looks with a new offensive coordinator? We'll start there with the offensive expectations here for a team who, as always, because of John Harbaugh, has sky-high expectations as we update them to win the division. As of today, the Ravens sit at the top of the odds board at plus 140.
Yeah, Ben, I'm buying on these Baltimore Ravens, man. A lot of people are saying they're going to regress. They're counting on them to take a step back. You get the usual crowd who... just wants to hate on Lamar Jackson anytime they can. I did a top 10 QB list a week ago with Jared Smith, and Lamar Jackson's number two on that list for me. He's a two-time MVP. People want to attack him for, he's a runner. He's not a true quarterback. Rewatch the Ravens-Miami game from the end of last season. Lamar hardly ran that game. He showed you he is a true quarterback. He's, I think, the second-best quarterback in the league. I'm not worried about him or this Ravens team at all. I think, Todd Monken having another year working with him, you might look at that and say, well, other teams have film and, they kind of know the Ravens MO now. I look at that and say that they're just going to get more comfortable. And I look for a huge passing season out of Lamar. Mark Andrews stays healthy. He's got his number one target. Isaiah Likely out of, where's he out of? Coastal Carolina. I love this kid. He's that new age tight end, really doesn't do a whole lot of blocking. He's just kind of a much bigger slot receiver, but he runs like the wind. He has great size for mismatches. And then you throw in Bateman and Zay Flowers, who I think you're going to see tremendous growth in Flowers' game. Obviously had some mishaps in that AFC championship game against Kansas City. But I think that the Ravens are primed to have another explosive offensive season. And the biggest loss to me is Gus Edwards. I love what he brought to them on the goal line and in short yardage important situations. But now they get as good a power back as any in existence with Derrick Henry. So it's going to be a lot of fun for Baltimore this year. I think that they certainly soar past that 10.5 win total.
And it's also a team that has a tough strength of schedule, just like basically everybody in the AFC North because of the strength of the team. So it's not something you really can take as gospel and say, well, that'll be a reason why the team is set to struggle. Todd Monken in year two, if you're making me kind of pick a side of the aisle there, Joe, I definitely tend to agree with you where, yes, everybody's going to have film on guys after 1 year, but you also like the personnel that they are bringing in and finding new ways to diversify that offense, especially with the case being made that it could be very beneficial to have Derrick Henry getting a fresh start there coming over from Tennessee, even though three offensive linemen have to be replaced from a season ago. That was really the headliner of the departures with Morgan Moses, John Simpson, and Kevin Zeitler all leaving. Also, the question, too, on the defensive side, it becomes you have Mike McDonald, great young mind. He leaves to take the Seattle head coaching job. So in comes Zachary Orr, and there were a couple of pieces that left, like a Patrick Queen at linebacker that we came to get very familiar with over the last couple of years. That team did bring in Chris Board, and they also drafted Nate Wiggins late in the first round with their original draft pick. If we are buying on Baltimore, there also has to be a belief that we are very high on Orr as well coming in with his scheme and the ability to keep a very good defense at that same top 10 level. How much conviction do you have in that, Joe, from the defensive side of the ball there for Baltimore?
Look, McDonald's a great DC. I'm not worried at all about this defense. You know, you mentioned losing someone like Patrick Queen, who they lost in division. But they've got Roquan Smith in that linebacking core, who's one of the most talented, versatile linebackers in the game. Another guy who I think is very underrated, who provides great leadership. I love him in the clubhouse, Kyle Van Noy. You know, I feel like Van Noy doesn't always get the best reputation because he's very outspoken. He doesn't care what the media thinks of him. I've had a couple interactions with Van Noy, and I love this guy. And I know his teammates love him, too. So I'm not all that worried about the defense up front. I think they're strong with Pierce. I love Odafe Owe, the former Penn State pass rusher on the edge there. And that secondary. I mean, Kyle Hamilton's a stud. Their safeties are secure. Their cornerbacks, you know, they got a first-round pick. Nate Wiggins probably going to be their slot corner to start out this year. I think their corners are tough. It's really a defense that I'm not worried about at all. And, you know, you look at the offensive line, and obviously 60% of it's new. But they've got some really good pieces plugged in there, too. Andrew Voorhees coming in at left guard. Love his profile as a guard in the NFL. Was left tackle for USC when he was in college. And he was a stud left tackle. He's reliable, leaves it all out there every play. You know, I wouldn't say I'm the expert when it comes to breaking down film of college offensive linemen, but living out in LA, going to USC games, I actually noticed Voorhees stand out to me a ton. So that's the kind of difference maker he is. And I think him and Ronnie Stanley on the left side of that line, I think Lamar's blind side is going to be more than protected, man. I'm not worried about Baltimore one bit, truthfully.
When you look at some of the early returns on the positional rankings, it's something I value so heavily as we start to put together a power rating and just building off of where you were from a season ago. I mean, going into the postseason, my final end of year power ratings, I mean, I had Baltimore number two, very closely behind San Francisco. And right now, the early returns are this should still be a very good defense. I like that Zach Orr was within that system where he was promoted from the inside linebackers coach. So it's not like you have some fresh, exotic face, right, that comes in and is going to try and change everything. At least for PFF, they have Baltimore 12th best defensive line, 6th best linebacker unit, and 4th in secondary. You also, even though Justin Tucker is getting up there in age, you still have one of the premier best kickers in the NFL, which makes you feel pretty good about all the question marks being, at least the question marks on the offensive line, kind of being diffused by the talent that is there, the rest of the roster, and just the general infrastructure that's in place.
Yeah, and if you look at that schedule in front of us right now, keep that on the screen for me, Wyatt. I wouldn't be shocked if they went to Arrowhead and pulled out a week one win. We've seen the Chiefs have a few letdown spots, week one in recent years. I mean, it's not the most daunting schedule. You got the Broncos, the Giants on there. You know, they always struggle with the Steelers a bit. I think last year they were 0-2 against Pittsburgh. One of those games, I don't really look too much into because it was week 18, I believe, and everyone was benched. But this is not a schedule. I think Buffalo, that game is in Baltimore. That should be a win. I think this team can go to Dallas. And, I really see this team turning out probably a 12-5 season.
And it is the NFC East on the crossover this year for the AFC North. That week one game, you just figure, Joe, as we get closer, going to be so much betting interest. Remember, Kansas City was at one point a six-point favorite, got steamed against in the market, closed 4.5, lost outright to Detroit on opening night. They've been more like 3 not all offseason, but you have to think as we get closer, you know, at least from a pure power rating standpoint. I mean, I know many people were on Baltimore in the home game against Kansas City last year, and I'm sure for those of us that look at it from, you know, you're not buying into the narrative street, you're more looking at it from an X's and O's power rating perspective, will certainly feel like the value is going to be on Baltimore as we extrapolate things and turn the page to week one.
Yeah, if I can get 3.5, man, I'll be in heaven. If I get a 3.5 or a 4, I'm going to jump on the Ravens in that spot. You know, Kansas City, look, they're the best team in football, right? I've never picked against the Chiefs in a Super Bowl. Burned me once against Tampa Bay, but I've never picked against Mahomes in a Super Bowl. I probably never will in the Super Bowl or in a playoff game, frankly. Regular season, the Chiefs, you know, they're going to have some letdown spots. I don't even consider this a letdown spot. Maybe some do because it'll be at Arrowhead. But I don't consider a week one game against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens a letdown spot. I just think it's actually a great spot to try to find value on Baltimore. Kansas City is going to be great. Baltimore is going to be great. These are two teams that are both going to be in the playoffs at the end of the day. People just love to hate on Lamar and the Ravens, and I'm not one of them, man. I'm very high on this team.
Yeah, Ravens and Chiefs right now for week one at DK. That is Chiefs -3, total of 47. Yeah, I kind of felt like, and I talked about this with Stormy Bonantoni on Lombardi Line last week, her and I were the only two that have Baltimore going to the Super Bowl in our NFL betting guide. I kind of feel like we're zagging a little bit from the convention of wisdom on the market. You seem to be in lockstep with that as well, Joe Serallo. All right, when we come back, time to catch up with one of our faves. He's Lou Finocchiaro breaking down UFC Fight Night here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than a month, and lucky for you, the VSIN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. Access this invaluable guide. You need to be a VSIN Pro subscriber for a limited time. We're offering an unbeatable deal. Get a full year of VSIN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240 price, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That is 13 months of access to everything VSIN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides like the NFL guide to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code SHARP to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 and gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. One of the many benefits of being a VSiN Pro subscriber is you get Gamble and Lose articles each and every UFC card. Lou Finocchiaro about to join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. We're back on Sharp Money, and we welcome in Lou from the desert. He's a guy, though, I mean, he's a man of many tastes, Joe. He's doing some horse racing right now at Saratoga. I know your NFL prep is ongoing here, Lou. Great to see you, as always. Where are you at right now, just within your process? Because you're a great guy to talk to about process when it comes to your NFL portfolio as we sit, again, inside a month till preseason gets underway.
That's right. And first of all, I sure appreciate you, Ben and Joe, having me on. It's great to share some insight. My NFL process, I'm 4 teams of 32 deep. So I have a majority, 28 teams left at 4 teams a day. I'm about 9 or 10 days away from being able to talk very knowledgeably about right now every team other than Arizona, Atlanta, Baltimore, and Buffalo. So I'll get there. There's a lot of study that goes into my prep for the NFL. But I really love to bang my head against the NFL and compete. And the only way to do that effectively is to put in your time.
Well, Lou, I love the meticulous effort in prepping for the season. Ben and I seem to be in the minority, but we are in agreement when you look at the Baltimore Ravens. And I just want to hit on them quickly because they're one of the 4 teams it sounds like you've already gotten to. We just spent, you know, an entire 15 minutes talking about how much we love them, despite most people around the industry being a little low on the Ravens after a 13-4 season that took them to the AFC Championship game. What's your, you know, quick little outlook here on Baltimore this season? I think that 10.5 win total number is too low.
Normally, Joe, look at teams with high numbers to go low underneath them, and I'll look at teams with lows and I'll go high. I hate to get stuck in the 8s. Baltimore is nowhere near there, and on their in their favor, they have more rest days than their competition to the tune of like 16 days, which is an obtuse number and doesn't happen often in the NFL. That said, they have the toughest schedule in the NFL of all 32 teams. So there's a lot to think about here. I'm not the biggest Lamar Jackson fan, but I think this new offense makes me like him a lot more. And by that, I mean the advent of Derrick Henry hitting that team. They clearly flawed in the championship game last year with the play calling. Maybe this gets them away from that temptation. But I think it's a tall task to be investing in any of the NFC North teams this year, maybe shy of Pittsburgh.
AFC North, it is always, as you point out, Lou, such a rough and tumble division there. And that's why we're setting it up. It's great to have you on today because this is our AFC North day here on the show. He is Lou Finicaro joining us on our Progressive Guest Line. You can also check out his outstanding podcast on the UFC, the Bout Business podcast. UFC, not the only thing he talks about on that pod. Give him a follow at GamBlue. And we go out to Ball Arena in Denver tomorrow night, Lou, for our UFC fight night, where the main card is seen, as you would expect in a lot of these smaller cards, some interest on the favorite here, Rose Namajunas, getting bet up to about a $2.35 favorite over Tracy Cortez. Before we get into the rest of your plays on the card, what do you make of that main event there tomorrow night?
Well, I think it's a really tough task to ask Tracy Cortez, a Phoenix fighter, came from the Maryville area, a wrestling family. She's young, she's talented, she's a wrestling-based fighter, and that means she has to learn how to evade strikes and learn she has to learn how to throw them, and she's not there yet. So she comes in singularly dimensioned. She was due to fight another fighter next week. That fighter was a short, stocky tiger of a wrestler. Now she gets an ex-champion from another division fighting in her backyard, which is Denver, that has elevation, and Cortez has to take this fight a week earlier than she planned, cut the weight earlier than she planned as well, travel to elevation. It's just a very, very tough ask. She's going to try and wrestle Rose up, get her to the ground. That takes a lot of energy, and I could see Cortez being very competitive early, but I think the experience of Rose is too much in her backyard with elevation. She's had a full camp, and you'll see a theme of what I'm going to talk about on this fight card. One theme is that there's fighters from Denver on the card that have advantage.
So, Lou, when you look at probably the closest thing we have on this board, on this card, to a pick'em between Dober and Silva, how do you see this one unfolding?
Okay, and Dober is another fighter that now fights out of Team Elevation in Denver. So he's there. He's had a full camp. He's been waiting for somebody because he's had a last-minute opponent switch. And so this man, John Silva, that comes in with great credentials. However, this fight's at 155, and Dober's a pedigreed lightweight, 155 pounds. John Silva's fought at 145, and he fought 2 weeks ago at 145. He missed weight, had an impressive showing, partially because he didn't have to cut that weight. But now, 2 weeks later, because five guys said no to Dober, they finally get to John Silva, and they probably twisted his arm to take the fight a little. But Silva, too, has to travel on short notice, cut the weight, and compete at the altitude of Denver against a Denver fighter that's acclimated and had a full camp there. Advantage Dober, to me, I agree more with the opening line of -160 or so in Dober's favor. It's all recency pushing you to Silva.
And now down to a pick'em, as we're just talking about here. UFC Fight Night from Ball Arena in Denver. That's also a fascinating part of the handicap with the elevation altitude going on there tomorrow, as Lou Finicaro joins us on our Progressive Guest Line. I'm always in wonderment, Lou, of all the value you're able to extract, especially out of the preliminary card. You've got a couple of plays for us from prelims. That's why we love you here, Lou, because you are as locked in as anybody on a couple of plays that stood out to you within prelims there that go on tomorrow.
One is the Canadian fighter, and her first name's Jasmine. Her last name I'll try and pronounce, Jazudovicius. We're going to call her Jasmine. She's a pedigreed 125-pound UFC fighter with 6-8 fights under her belt. She's better than journeyman, not quite elite, but been in with some elite. She gets a first-time debuting fighter that comes from the East Coast. Again, the East Coast fighter has to come to Denver on short notice. She fights this young Fatima Klein at 115. She's agreed to take the fight for the opportunity at 125, which is 10 pounds higher than she normally competes. Meanwhile, Jasmine has been in Denver for 3 weeks, acclimating to the elevation, preparing herself. There's just too much experience, size, and pedigree in Jasmine to overlook her for the newcomer. Now, Jasmine opened minus 270. Now you can get her minus 120, minus 130. That's right. There was a flood of money that came in on Ms. Klein, and she's a talented submission artist, but you're going to have to prove it to me first. I'll side with Jasmine by far at that value of a prize.
Hey, Lou, so I want to take a quick look at a middleweight bout we've got going on tomorrow. Is there any value on Cody Brundage? Couple of heavy hitters going at it here. Brundage at plus $1.40. He's also got 8 years of youth on his side in this matchup. Do you think the value is on him plus $1.40?
I'm glad you asked about that one, and the answer is, Joe, is a direct no. Cody Brundage, I think, is on the cusp of UFC, to be quite honest with you. He's really a wrestler. He does apparently well in his training, but when the lights go on, he's had a tendency to struggle. And this is a foundational fight for both these guys because the loser's probably gone. And Brundage, wrestling-based, not very good at striking and surely not good at defending the strike. He's in against a powder keg, kind of hand grenade-type fighter in Razak Al-Hassan. Yeah, he's 37 years old, but he's strong. He's been in with better fighters. He's short, he's stocky, he's explosive. And I don't see Brundage surviving very long in this fight. I like Al-Hassan in this fight via devastation.
Just a 10-6 record as well coming in there for Brundage as we're talking with Lou Finicaro. UFC Fight Night tomorrow night from Ball Arena in Denver. Check out Lou's podcast about business and follow him at Gamblu. You also can get the rest of his plays on VSiN.com for pro subscribers. His write-ups each and every UFC card. As always, great to catch up with you, Lou. I'm sure we'll be seeing you in person here as you, I know you're due for that pilgrimage to Vegas every summer. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good afternoon and good luck to everybody.
We absolutely will. Man, making weight and then you factor in altitude too. That's a tough combo. Not my cup of tea.
I'm with you. You got to be really sharp to, when you know who's training where, who does better at altitude. That's why we bring guys like Lou on. Here I was thinking Brundage, 8 years of youth on his side. These guys' measurables match up pretty well. I thought there was value there, and Lou shot it down, and I'm glad he did.
Lou tells it to you straight. That's why we love him. When we come back, we continue our AFC North breakdowns in the NFL. The Cincinnati Bengals are up next. We'll get into it right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now at VSiN.com, we have all sorts of best bets, including exclusive articles, betting splits, odds by state betting tools and betting guides. Lou Finicaro, who's just on with us, he has his breakdowns for UFC Fight Night in Denver tomorrow night. And Mike Somich will join us in about a half hour in studio, on set, however you want to phrase it, in the bar at Bar Canada. Mike Somich, he's got his plays for Saratoga rest of the day today. Saratoga getting underway yesterday. A lot of great action there on the racetrack in horse racing. As we're back here on Sharp Money, what also figures to be a very hotly contested, great action-packed division this year, Joe Serallo, is the AFC North. We start by breaking down the Baltimore Ravens. I suppose on one hand, it's very tough if you're a bettor to really love Baltimore, think they're going to go over 10.5, and also feel the same way about Cincinnati, right? Like, that's just kind of conventional wisdom. If you're going to side with one, you're probably going to have to go down on the other. But I've learned not to assume here, Joe, so we'll pitch you here on the Bengals as the second favorite, just slightly behind the Ravens by about 5 cents, but they share the same exact win total of 10.5. And what's nice for Cincinnati is they do get the last place schedule here, so that's the one real big benefit. But so much is expected automatically with Joe Burrow back healthy at quarterback for them to reemerge as a very good team in the AFC. How do you see it going here in 2024?
Yeah, this one's tricky when you look at the win total. Everything in me wants to go over. I think that there's certainly a 10-win team. But Ben, this win total play is a stay away for me because, to me, this is a 10 or 11-win team. If I'm going to take an over, that means that I see that team going over that total by 1.5. I'm not going to bet it if I think that they're going to go, a 10.5 win over under. If I think they're going to go 11, it's a stay away. If I think they go 12, maybe even 13, like I do with Baltimore, then it's a play. But with Cincinnati here, The schedule's favorable for sure. You look at the Patriots. Now, Joe Burrow, for whatever reason, historically has stunk weeks one and two. He's got to get a week one win under his belt here, home against New England. You know, Commanders at home, at Carolina. You've got games, you know, home against the Raiders. To me, what really could be the difference maker pushing them over that 10.5 mark, when you're dealing with the AFC North, first of all, I just assume 3-3 against your division. That's what you have to assume in that division, 3-3. And then do they win all the games they're supposed to at Tennessee, you know, home against Denver? And then can they split with the Chargers and Cowboys in those two road games? Or, you know, actually really what it comes down to is, can you go 2-1 Eagles, Chargers, Cowboys? You go 2-1, you're definitely going over that 10.5 mark. If you split the Chargers, Cowboys road games, you can still get to 11-7. And that's assuming 3-3 and assuming, you know, they beat, you know, all the bad last place teams on their schedule that they're frankly supposed to be. It's just, it's a lot to ask. You know, you're asking them to essentially not have a slip up. They're a team that even if they go 10-7 and get a wild card, I think can be very dangerous in the postseason. I love this team. I'm not knocking this team. I just don't know if I have the conviction to bet over 10.5 because it's a lofty number.
Sure. The first place a lot of people will start to talk about, Joe, it is the protection of quarterback Joe Burrow, who now comes off of the injury. And that's really been the storyline of his career. It's, can he stay upright? And there's been so much invested in this Bengal O-line. Once again, they bring in some pieces in the offseason led by Trent Brown. Also, you spend a first-round draft pick on Marius Mims to help fortify the offensive line. A lot of the early returns on positional rankings, if I look at Sharp Football, they have the Bengals tied for 9th in their offensive line rankings. But with the caveat that Orlando Brown just simply has to be better. He was 30th out of 35 left tackles in pressure rate allowed a season ago. And you're talking about a blindside protector for one of the most important players in all of football in Joe Burrow. That's probably where this handicap, you know, really begins on the offensive side. It is an offensive line that has been plagued by underperformance and injury over the years. Do they finally get back to that level of consistency we saw when the Bengals made their Super Bowl run a couple years ago to allow Joe Burrow to stay upright and not have to worry as he makes his return from injury? That's where I'm, as much as I feel like there is reason to be optimistic, I still can't go and commit all the way that I feel super confident in Cincinnati's O-line holding up and being great all year to a top 10 level.
Yeah, and you know, it's actually impressive last year that all things considered with the Burrow injury that they had a winning record. But if Burrow gets hurt, you know, if he misses 3 weeks this season, you can probably forget that 10.5 mark. Yeah, the O-line's concerning. Orlando Brown really can't be much worse than he was a year ago. And the thing is, Ben, you know, you talk about the O-lines, they certainly got it together. They got their stuff together a little bit during that Super Bowl run, but they still weren't great. They almost made it to the Super Bowl in spite of the offensive right. line that season. So you need to see vast improvement. I will say, you know, I do love the weapons. Losing Joe Mixon hurts because not only is Joe Mixon, and last year he had a down year in terms of productivity, but what he does really well, and he continued to do well last year, is Joe Mixon's a great blocking running back. So now losing that, Zach Moss doesn't really add much in terms of blocking in the backfield, but I love the addition of Mike Gesicki. I'm probably higher than most on Gesicki. I've always really been high on him and loved his game. And, you know, they lose Boyd, but they bring in Gesicki, obviously different positions, but equally as good of a weapon for Joe Burrow, a better weapon than Boyd when you look at the red zone. So I think, you know, the offense is going to have some firepower. It's just a matter of, can Burrow stay healthy? Can he stay upright? I worry about him being a little fragile. And, you know, you see him walk in the runways at the fashion shows in Paris, and that makes me think he's slightly more fragile.
There you go. We needed the hot take on the fashion statement.
The backless jacket that he wore in Paris.
Let's be honest. I think Joe, he likes Mike Gesicki because of the gritty. Come on, you got to admit.
You know, actually, it's because he's a Penn State guy. I'm a huge Penn State fan, so that's all that it's got to do with for me. I watched him a ton in college, but the gritty doesn't hurt.
I guess I won't tell you that I'm a big Michigan fan, but go back to the offensive line. I mean, we're going back in the past, but it really felt like if they had a decent offensive line, I felt like the Bengals should have beat the Rams in that Super Bowl, right?
There were so many moments, where they could not protect on the biggest of plays. It happened on the final drive where all of a sudden you're getting pressure right in Burrow's face, and next thing you know, it's a fourth down and the game is over. That's a totally valid point on the O-line as we're talking Bengals season outlook here on Sharp Money. I also look at the defensive side of the ball, Joe, and we were so high on a DC and Lou Anarumo who took that defense to previously unseen heights. And that was another big reason why Cincinnati made that Super Bowl run to take on the Rams a couple years ago. But last year, you look at the final numbers, 28th rush defense, 28th pass defense, dead last, and that's on an EPA per play basis, dead last in yards per drive allowed, dead last in yards per play. That has nothing to do with Joe Burrow, right? As much as they were out on the field more because of a backup quarterback and shoddy offensive play toward the end of the year, you still can't excuse how bad it was for Cincinnati. If you look at the positional rankings here, PFF, 13th best D-line, 14th best linebacker core, 14th best secondary, despite losing Chidobe Awuzie at corner, losing DJ Reader on the D-line, they do add Sheldon Rankins at defensive tackle and Geno Stone at safety. That, to me, as much as we want to focus on the offense, Joe, defense can't get by being a bottom five unit and expect them to win double-digit games as is projected here in 2024.
Yeah, you're 100% right. You look at their they had a December matchup with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Steelers were just throwing the ball all over the field down their throats. It's like, if you couldn't stop Pittsburgh's passing offense a year ago, you couldn't stop anyone. And I would point out, and I would argue, Ben, that, you know, you're 100% right. You look at that, or Wyatt, it might have been you, when you look at that Super Bowl and the way the offensive line crumbled there in the second half when they were put in really good position early in the third quarter with that immediate touchdown to Higgins down the left sideline. The defense that year, I think, was more responsible for that Super Bowl run than the offensive line. The defense was really playing great ball second half against Kansas City. Almost the entire game, practically, against the Rams, the defense was great. Last year, defense, different story. And by the way, quickly on that Super Bowl, I was in the I had a great view of that atrocious offensive line play. I was at the game, second row from the top at SoFi. Nice. I don't know if you guys have been to SoFi. It gets high up there at SoFi. It gets steep. Second row from the top. And that last play where Burrow had to rush the throw on fourth down would have set him up in field goal range. I mean, the offensive line just didn't have a chance. They just, you know, the Rams blew that play up instantly. The offensive line's been a problem there for a long time. The defense was was really helping Burrow cut them some slack, get him the ball back. If neither of those are clicking, things could get ugly, but I think the defense will come around. I think the offensive line's probably the biggest question mark.
I'm still bitter about that game because I took the Bengals money line. It was there. I could taste it.
Wyatt, how about this? I had the Bengals money line, and I also had them with the spread, which cashed. But I had an 11-leg parlay that went 10-1. Oh. It was $10 to win $1,500. And do you know what the loser was? Cincinnati, second half, over 10.5 points. They had 10 on their first two drives in the third quarter, didn't score the rest of the game.
Would have paid for the Super Bowl ticket. I mean,
I was going to say,
that was a freebie.
Oh, that was a free. I was going to say, second row from the top. That'd be like, what, to 10 grand?
You could have been in the actual top row. I mean, you did pretty well. I remember about that. I remember there was a lot of wild on the betting side because of the fact that the Rams won the game outright, which a lot of people had the money line, or I remember, like, you could take them in-game money line at a much better price, and then also Cincinnati covering on the spread. Unfortunately, Wyatt still slightly bitter about it.
You were watching that game. We were downstairs at South Point.
Yeah, we were. That's right. We were together at the venerable South Point for our live
I can't remember. You had a bet, and you kept complaining that.
Oh, yeah. No, I had a bet of both teams. No, I had a bet of there will be all three timeouts taken by one, or no, sorry, all six timeouts taken in the game by one team.
That's right. I just kept hearing Ben, take a timeout.
And McVay used all three timeouts in the first half, and it used two in the second half. And I'm like, hey, call a timeout, man. Set up your defense before the fourth down, and they get the stop. And McVay had the Bengals got the first down. Maybe McVay uses a timeout to ice the kicker, and I win, but it didn't happen.
Right.
Anyway, yes, random bets of Super Bowls past that we, for whatever reason, remember for all eternity. When we come back, we'll wrap up the AFC North division discussion as we continue here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back in, live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. Hanging out on a Friday with Joe Cirallo. I'm Ben Wilson, Wyatt Tomchek, our producer in the house. We will have Mike Somich, co-host of The Handle on the weekend. So he'll be joining us here at the desk coming up in 15 minutes. We'll get a full two segments with Mike and also the long-awaited reveal of owing to Joe's Italian heritage. Wyatt, really pushing for this today, Joe, but we got to get to, because last time you and I were together, July 4th, we did our best barbecue foods, and now we're doing your best, your top five Italian foods. So your whole reputation is pretty much at stake here.
You can't escape the Italian sausage this time, Ben. You got it. You got rid of it on your top five list 4th of July for some freaking chorizo, but you're not getting away from it today.
No. And I stand by what I said back then. Today is all about you, Joe. Today is it's your day. We'll do that in a little bit. Also break down the Major League Baseball card, since that is really really it here on a Friday night after we now have set the Wimbledon finals, both on the women's and the men's side. Just now waiting on Euro and Copa America 2024 finals each on Sunday. And we also will have one last tournament, Scottish Open, second round just wrapping up. That'll be something to keep track of because the Open Championship coming up next week at Royal Troon. Right now, we'll just do quick thoughts here, Joe. Not enough time to get through both teams. We've been dedicating an entire segment, but we'll just get some initial rapid-fire thoughts from you both on the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns as we look at the rest of the AFC North here on the show today. Certainly we'll have more time as the ramp-up to the regular season gets underway to break down these teams more in earnest. But at least from the division perspective here, you do have Cleveland this year coming in at third on the odds board at plus 550. Steelers rounded out at plus 850. Each team's with sub 9 win totals are each at 8.5 here for Cleveland. As far as the Browns, I feel like it's pretty simple where you kind of know what you're getting on defense. It's all about what can Deshaun Watson do at QB, Joe. Is it as simple to you as that as a handicap for how to assess the Browns, or is there something deeper that you're really wanting to see for Cleveland before you buy in?
Yeah, no, I'm actually leaning under on Cleveland. I'm not high on Deshaun. I'm not high on this team. I think that they overperformed. They had an incredible storyline last year with 5 different quarterbacks and Joe Flacco ultimately leading the way to 11 wins, but I think they got exposed, you know, in the postseason for the fact that they really did overexceed and overperform last season. I was all over Houston in that game in which no one was giving the Texans a shot. And I think that that is what really the Browns are. I think they're a last place team, you know, and look, last place could mean 8-9. It could even mean 9-8 in the AFC North. So I'm probably not going to play that win total, but I'll tell you a win total I am playing is the Pittsburgh Steelers at over 8.5. You know, you look at the Browns, right there, their schedule should be a little tougher. Although people are saying Pittsburgh has one of the toughest strength of schedules, in football this year. I'd have to see them side by side. And also, I mean, you know, one website could have Pittsburgh at the toughest, which I've seen. Another could have them at 14th.
No, you're right. And at least from Sharp Football, who does this based off of win totals in Vegas. And to me, that's a pretty good, accurate way of looking at this stuff. That's how I at least take more stock into that. Steelers are the toughest strength of schedule. Browns, third toughest. Ravens, by the way, fourth toughest strength of schedule. And that, again, owes to the fact they are in such a competitive division there, to your point, Joe.
Yeah, and if you look at the Steelers' schedule, like just look at how they'll start, right? Yeah, there's a chance they start, you know, 2-3, but I think it's more likely that they'd probably come out the gate and start 3-2 in those first 5. You know, I mean, Pittsburgh is the toughest team year in and year out to go up and down the schedule and play, give them a win, give them a loss, because, you know, they'll end up with maybe the same record that you predict. Maybe they'll go 9-8, just like you said, but they'll have a different outcome in all 17 games that you try to predict, right? They're a very unpredictable team. They could go out there and absolutely stymie a killer offense, and then they can go out there and just lay an egg against a team that they should have beaten and lose, you know, 10-7. So it's really hard to say, like, you know, Pittsburgh's going to win, you know, X games, and you know they're going to lose Y games. Like I said, when you're dealing with the AFC North, I just chalk them up as all 3-3 against their own division. They went 2-0 against Baltimore last year, did these Steelers. They might have been 4-2 within their division a season ago. So you never look past them, and Mike Tomlin just simply does not finish below 500. So yeah, plus money, plus $1.35, I will take the over 8.5 on the Steelers team. Defense is improved. Quarterback situation's improved. I trust Tomlin all day.
Is your conviction in Pittsburgh, how much of that is tied to a Russell Wilson resurgence paired with new OC Arthur Smith? How much of that is irrelevant in your mind? Could this be a team that ultimately turns to Justin Fields and has some success? How do you parse that together as a better?
Look, if I was running things there, it'd be Justin Fields from the get. I'm not all that high on Russell Wilson. And I think Justin Fields is the shiny new toy that Arthur Smith actually, you know, it's reported he wanted him in Atlanta when he was the head coach down there. So, you know, maybe if the Steelers start slow, they turn, you know, Russ has a short leash and they turn to Justin Fields. But either way you slice it, it's a massive upgrade from Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph and Mitch Trubisky. So, you know, even though I'm partial to Justin Fields, both of those quarterbacks are a massive upgrade from the Steelers QB room that had just 13 passing touchdowns combined a year ago. So, you know, again, Justin Fields is my guy, but either way, you know, it's an upgraded offense, it's an upgraded defense, and an upgraded quarterback, no matter what you think about either of those options compared to what they had last year.
And look, make no mistake, Arthur Smith struggled with clock management, struggled with facial hair decisions as his head coach at Atlanta, but make no mistake, great offensive mind. My big concern is just, will they give him, will ownership in the top of how they run things in Pittsburgh, they have been so staunchly anti-innovation on offense, right? They've made it clear. It's a big reason why Matt Canada didn't have success. They're like, you're going to run the football like it's 1972 over and over. Will they allow Arthur Smith to cook, for lack of a better term, in the way he ought to be and open up this playbook? Because if so, and if you get a guarantee of that happening and you see the powers that be kind of stay out of the way of Smith, I'm with you, Joe. This could be a very exciting team on Pittsburgh. I just want to see it before I actually believe it happening. And I also want to see how Russell Wilson actually is integrated in the locker room, because I certainly thought on paper it was not a good fit whatsoever when you think about what Mike Tomlin and what Pittsburgh stand for.
Yeah, I think that they'll let Smith do his thing, because I think that they've learned, right? Look, in Pittsburgh, yes, they've been finishing with a winning record every year. But in Pittsburgh, that's not the standard, right? The standard is postseason success. And they haven't had that in close to a decade under Tomlin. He got off to a really hot start, made it to two Super Bowls, won one almost instantaneously. And then they've really fallen off. Even when they make the playoffs, they don't make any noise in the playoffs. So I think that they will give Smith some freedom. And I think you can see that with the personnel choices, right? They've reverted away from the old school traditional build of a quarterback, right? Kenny Pickett kind of looked like an old school quarterback. He's garbage. Mitch Trubisky looks like an old school quarterback, you know, similar body type to Roethlisberger, not as big a stature, but Trubisky, pretty big guy. He stinks. Russ Wilson, Justin Fields, more hybrid type quarterbacks. Russ more of a pocket presence than Fields, but also Wilson, we've seen plenty of times in his career, even though he's a little older now, he can still scoot when he needs to. He wasn't running as frequently in Denver as he did in Seattle, but still ran effectively in Denver. You look at Cordarrelle Patterson, right? He's not a traditional running back. Cordarrelle Patterson, look, if they want to run between the tackles, they're not going to give it to Patterson. They're going to give it to Najee Harris. Patterson's going to free up some motion, some trickier plays, some Arthur Smith schematic stuff that we saw with him and Cordarrelle Patterson in Atlanta when they were together. So I do think when you look at the personnel they have on offense that, you know, unless they've completely got their heads where it don't shine, they're definitely going to give Smith some freedom.
Okay, we're talking Pittsburgh Steelers, Cleveland Browns as we wrap up our AFC North conversation here on Sharp Money. So you're looking over, Joe, on Pittsburgh. Cleveland, as we get a couple minutes on them to wrap up the segment here, if you look at some of the positional grades, you know, fifth in defensive line, eighth at linebacker, sixth in the secondary, that is usually a sort of thing where if it is so universally positive, you're thinking, okay, this is a really good situation where a team that is all the way down at 8.5 would be in that position to go over here. But you look at some of the end of season numbers. I mean, 28th in yards per play, 28th in yards per drive. You end up with in a quarterback room that was by far bottom 10, even if you're adding some of the good numbers they got from comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, at the end of the day here. Is it as simple to say, all right, Cleveland, we're just going to see them as a great unders team because they might win some games solely on the defense and nothing else? Because I just have a really hard time seeing Deshaun Watson recapturing some of that early career form. I'm kind of at the point where it would really surprise me if he turned into a top 10 quarterback now at this stage, as great as he showed some flashes there at the start.
Yeah, I'm with you. To me, you know, and like I said, I did that top 10 quarterback exercise with Jared a week ago. Watson didn't even come up as a possibility. And you can argue a lot of guys, to me, like 6 through 15 is wide open. But Watson wasn't even close to cracking my top 10. I don't trust him. I don't trust his decision-making. Frankly, I don't trust his accuracy a whole lot. I don't think Jerry Jeudy is a huge upgrade to that receiver room because, frankly, I don't think Jerry Jeudy is all that good. I think he'll have two or three games where he absolutely erupts this season. And I think he'll have more than three games where, you know, fans watching the game are like, was Jerry Jeudy even out there for four quarters today? Because, you know, he kind of had that knack for being a disappearing act with Denver a lot of the time. I like their defense again. I do think it'll be tough to replicate the levels at which their defense performed a year ago. So to me, the problem there is that they have such little margin for error on the defensive side, where unless they play, you know, exactly the same type of ball as they did a year ago, they're not going to win as many games. I don't trust their offense. Cooper's great, but, you know, which Nick Chubb are we getting? Is he going to return to form? Just too many question marks on offense that I don't like for this Cleveland team. I think they're going to be in last place.
Over under number of Jameis Winston games this year. That to me is the most enticing bet on the board.
What's the number? What's the number?
Well, I don't know. It's not a number. No. What are you setting it at, Mr. Oddsmaker?
Set it at 4.5 and I'll go over. Okay. I love Jameis. I love Jameis.
I'd love to see Jameis Cook in Cleveland. When we come back, Mike Somich, he is here. He is at the desk. We'll get his thoughts on the AFC North, talk some season-long NFL plays, and Major League Baseball up next.